We are back, ladies and gentlemen, on Coaches to the Moon. It's a beautiful day. First podcast in a couple of weeks. We had some tech issues, but life goes on. Today, I've been speaking with Randy Crane, a gentleman who's been in marketing for 40 years. And goodness me, doesn't it show? He knows his stuff. And when we talked about his journey through marketing, where he's worked pre-internet, he worked in the days of flyers and nothing but TV ads. He's gone through it all, the dot-com bubble, social media, AI. He's worked with companies like Apple, Amazon, PayPal, Ben & Jerry's, one of my favorites. Yet when we dig into it, it's really interesting how Randy approaches the idea of marketing and of sales. And this is not a nuts and bolts podcast. If you're looking for implementable CRM software advice, this is not the show for you. But if you're looking for grander concepts that can help you through the trials and tribulations of everyday business, in sales, in marketing, in delivery, and just picking yourself up on the days when it sucks, Randy has a show for you. I really, really enjoyed this. We went on a little bit longer than usual because Randy's a storyteller and a very engaging one at that. So I really hope you enjoy this one today, guys. Get yourself a drink, have a little sit down, and let's learn from the master. Here he is, everyone, Randy Crane on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Right here again, going transatlantic over to Toronto, Canada, where my guest, Randy Crane, the fearless marketer, is hanging out and excited. I'll start with a quick apology. We've been off for about 3 weeks due to some technical issues that I am far too dim-witted to sort out myself, my team, and Christian have fixed it for us. So let's get into today's podcast with Randy Crane, the fearless marketer. My friend, really great talking to you. How are you today?
Fantastic. Alex, I've been looking forward to this conversation, my friend.
Great. Oh, I'm very, very flattered to hear it, man. It's we've been talking for about 15 minutes already, and I dare say we're getting on like a Canadian wildfire, mate. Not to put a sore spot there. How's that all going, by the way? Is Canada out of the woods, so to speak?
Canada's never out of the woods.
Got it.
Okay. You know, Canada is much the same as Australia. We need to get new government here.
Yes.
Okay. And yes. I'm sure I don't have to, I'm sure I don't have to tell you about politics and governments in Canada and Australia. You know what they're like. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we get the news. We get the news over here. And it's very funny, the way algorithms work, which echo chamber you get into. Whether you get the ones that are particularly praising or the opposite of certain organizations and governments. And I think, like most people who are probably listening to this podcast, I've found myself in the one that is not so favorable. But that's all good. You told me something really interesting before, Randy. You said that you were going to be a priest and then you didn't, and that's how you became a marketer. I'd love for you to tell us that story and draw that line, because I can't make sense of it.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I actually... my father was a salesman, and he was a great salesman, terrible accountant, terrible everything else, but he was really good at connecting with people. And from the time I was a young boy, I always wanted to be a priest. I always figured that was probably the best sales game in the world. Okay? So, all through my adolescent years, I was going to church, and I did the whole... altar boy, choir boy, did all that sort of stuff all the way going through it. And actually, I had studied theology, and I was about 6 weeks away from taking my vows. And just to backtrack a little bit, my father died in 1969. But he was such a nice fella, such a good salesman. All his customers came to the funeral. And I thought to myself, wow, that's really something. So when I was going to become a priest, before you become a priest, they give you an interview. And I decided to interview them at the same time as they were interviewing me, which didn't go over real well, but they lived with it. And I started asking questions that maybe you're not supposed to ask the church. I was asking questions about the political times of Jesus and the racial interaction that was going on at the time, all this type of thing. And of course, you know, they're coming back. You don't ask those questions. Anyways, after about an hour of this, they turned around and said to me, you know, maybe you need to take a leave of absence from your vocation and rethink about it. And I thought, you know what, that's a great idea. Let's do that. And so I took a leave of absence for a while. That was 40 years ago, and I'm still on that leave. Okay, I'm still reconsidering. But yeah, so anyways, while I was thinking about becoming a priest, I needed to make money in the meantime. I needed a job. And my dad was a salesman, and I got into marketing. And I found out that I really liked it. And then sometime over, I don't even know, the next 30 years, my education of being a priest, because I had continued studying long after my after leaving the church. To me, you know what, it was always about finding the truth. And I didn't feel I was getting the truth from the church. So, but over the next 20 or 30 years, my understanding of theology and my understanding of marketing came together. And emotion marketing was born for me at that moment. And I realized that what you think and what you feel creates reality. Your reality. And every human being in the world is emotionally connected to their wants and their desires in life. So the whole idea of going in and as I was taught to sell back in the 80s, it was about hi, my name is Randy. I'm with this company. We've been in business for 20 years. We have the best product, the best price, the best people, the best warranty, the best delivery. I'm sure you've heard this all before, Alex. Many times, right?
Yeah.
And none of those things are inspiring. They're certainly not going to inspire somebody to buy from you. I mean, they may be nice to know, but people aren't going to buy from you based on that information. So if they're not going to buy for that information, then it set me on a journey to find out what information they would buy. People are emotionally connected to their problems in life. They're connected to their needs, their wants, and their desires. Okay? And if you can't connect emotionally with your audience or your customer, then you're on an uphill climb. So I realized this early on, that this was going to be the case. So the whole concept of emotion marketing is how people buy. This is how people buy. Human beings don't make logical decisions. They don't make rational decisions. They make emotional decisions and then support it later with rationality. Or reason. So that's my story, my friend.
No, I love it. I love it. That's no, it makes a lot of sense, and I can see the parallels absolutely between sales and marketing and religion. Absolutely, it's getting people on board with a belief and letting them know this will probably solve the problems they're having and move them towards a destination to where they want to be.
Well, I think you know what you and I. I'm sure we can both agree on this. You know. We're taught that the world outside controls our inside. Mm. We're taught that. Okay, people will say, well, you know, it's because of the circumstances, or I'm in this shape because of what that person did or what that person did. It's always out there. And, you know, every religious teaching teaches the same thing, which is fix what's inside here, and you'll fix what's outside there. The world is nothing more than a reflection of who you are. You know, and I can prove this because, Alex, when you first got out of school, what did you do for, what was your first job?
My first job out of school, I was a cashier at a butcher shop.
Good. Can I ask you something?
Please.
Are you still a cashier at a butcher shop?
Not these days. No.
No. Of course not, right? You see, when you were a cashier at a butcher shop, you got all the advantages and disadvantages of being a cashier at a butcher shop. Today, you're a podcast host, a successful one, and you get all the advantages and disadvantages of being a successful podcast host. You don't get the advantages and disadvantages of being a cashier at a butcher shop. So, based on who you are, your reality changes. And for some people, it changes yearly. Some people, it changes daily. Some people, it changes hourly. It depends on your point of perspective. That being said, if reality is created by you, it's based on what? It's based on the only thing that your body and mind can control, what you think and what you feel. And if you ever notice something, and I really find this interesting, what you think causes what you feel, and what you feel causes more of what you think, which causes more of what you feel. So if you're feeling sad, what you think about being sad will make you feel sad. And then when you feel sad, it'll cause more of a thought to make you feel worse. And then you just keep going down that rabbit hole.
Yep.
And I'm sure, I mean, I know it's happened to me, I'm sure it's happened to you many times, but the same thing happens on the opposite side. If I feel happy, I feel happy. If I think happy, I feel happy. If I feel happy, I get more happy thoughts, which causes me to have more feelings of being happy.
Yep.
Okay? So, this is what I'm saying. We are in control of who we are. And understanding this as a marketer, as a salesperson, man, even as a human being, I think is so important. Because I think most people go through their lives not understanding. Well, and we hear this all the time, you know. Oh, I'm clinically depressed. My doctor says I'm depressed, therefore I'm depressed. I have this wrong with me. I have that wrong with me. Where all it would take is a change of thought. And those thoughts could change the trajectory of everything. Now, I'm not saying that, you know what, somebody may have cancer or whatever the case is, and I'm sorry, but do I think changing your thoughts would change that? Given the right amount of time, absolutely I do. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm one of those people, Alex, I smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day and have for 54 years. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't get cancer because I don't believe in cancer. And I don't believe in it. You can't get something if you don't believe in it. You got to believe in it first. Okay?
Yep.
And to me, it's probably the reason why I don't get cancer. I don't believe in it. Now, does that make it true for everybody? Probably not. Maybe it does. I don't know. What I can tell you is that your mind controls what you do. Your body or your heart controls what you do. And it controls that to a great degree. So when you emotionally feel something, it's like falling in love, brother. Okay? You know, you got your wife, You remember falling in love with her?
Every day, Randy.
And you know what, buddy? I'm going to tell you something. Once you realize that you're falling in love, there is nothing that compares to that feeling. Mm. It's not logical. It makes no sense. But you're in it, baby.
Yeah.
So marketing should be about the connection of feelings between one person and another and how that looks. It's the same thing when you're selling. You know, people will say, well, give them the facts, you know, but nobody buys facts. Mm. They buy solutions. They buy answers. They buy stories. But they don't buy facts. So being a good storyteller is always a big plus.
And you're certainly a good storyteller.
So thank you very much.
This is great, man. So I'll tell you a story about me to almost not challenge what you've just said, but to dig a little deeper into a different angle of it, was that when I first got into my own business, I ran a nutrition coaching business. I was quite fit and I was helping people to, mostly women, to start a new, more sustainable way of losing weight rather than up and down, crash diets, that sort of thing.
Sure.
Let's change the habits. And so I had a little program. It wasn't pricey. And the way I was taught to sell back then was very, close the deal, kind of like real closing style. Almost kind of Wolf of Wall Street style, but not quite that aggressive. And I got to a point where I could get on the phone. I believed I was going to get everyone signed up. And I did. I got everyone signed up. I knew exactly where I was going all the way up. And I had them, you know, future pacing what would happen if they didn't lose weight, how bad it could get, how good it could get. And then I'd ask them one question. It would be a yes or no. I'd pause and it would always be a yes. And I was like 95% of people signed up. But then also, because I got them, I was so good at creating so much emotion on this phone call. The next day when they woke up, the emotion was gone. The logic was still there. So I had to go back and find that balance, which I never did in that business, of, you know, just bringing in the logic and helping people to have emotion, but also rationale around what they were doing. So let's talk about that, Randy. In terms of business now, because I'm selling B2B, we sell marketing, we sell numbers. I can give someone a proposal, sit back and say, I'll see you in 2 days. Let's talk about it in 2 days. If I did that with a health coaching customer back in the day, they're gone forever. So where's that balance, man, between getting someone feeling strong emotions, but then also not getting buyer's remorse the next day?
You see, I think it comes down to how you present to the customer. You know, one of the things that I do is when I'm speaking directly with a customer, whether I'm doing a marketing campaign, I try to identify the elephant in the room. Okay, to give you an example. I'll talk to a customer and I'll find out why I'm here. Like, what do you need from me? Well, you know what, we're looking for a CRM system. I say, okay, great. What makes you think you need a CRM system? Well, you know what, we want to be able to track our customers, our leads, all that sort of thing. Okay, great. And once you track them, what are you going to do? Are you going to report them? Like, how do you want to? And I'd be asking really key questions. The better quality questions you ask, the better quality questions you get in return. And what you want to do is during this question and answer period, this is where the customer starts to get committed. You see, if I'm going to the trouble of asking you really qualified questions, and you're giving me really qualified answers, then the more questions I ask, A, the more I'm going to understand, but B, the more committed you are going to be to that conversation. So I'm going to keep asking more and more questions, making notes, writing down what I need to know. And then we're going to get down to the end. And I'm going to say to them, you know, Right now, you got a CRM system, and your boss said he wants you to get the CRM system set up. Tell me, John, how does that make you feel? How does it make you feel when your boss asks you to do something that you're not really sure what to do? Well, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. Well, what does that feel like? Does it make you feel happy? Does it make me sad? Makes me feel sad. And I said, okay. And you see, what I'm doing is I'm trying to drive those emotions, but I need him to tell me what those emotions are. Okay, there's no sense in me telling him. You see, once he's committed to those questions and he's committed to the answers to those questions, and he can start relating how he's feeling, that two-day wait, you don't have to worry about it anymore because it's going to be in the focus of his mind.
Yeah.
When your boss asks you to do something, he asked me to do this, it makes me feel this. When my boss asks me to do this, it makes me feel this, so I feel this. And when you start asking questions about how they feel, and you know, it's funny because I had a guy a couple of weeks ago, and he says to me, I was talking to him about a marketing campaign, and I said to him, I said, you know, you want to run ads for your restaurant? He said, yeah. And I said, well, how does that make you feel, knowing that you're going to be running ads for your restaurant? He said, well, it makes me feel great. Lots of new business coming through the door. That's really great. I said, yeah, that'll be good, right? And then I would ask him another question, and I'd say, you know, how does that make you feel? He turns around after about three or four of these. He says, what do you care how I feel? And I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to tell you something. Because without knowing how you feel, you're going to buy nothing. You're going to do the exact same thing as you did yesterday. Mm-hmm. He says, how do you know that? I said, I'll tell you how I know. Every day a human being has 80,000 thoughts in their head. Okay? Every day, people turn around and they say, I can't understand why my life doesn't change. And I'll tell you why. Because out of the 80,000 thoughts you had yesterday, 95% of them are the same thoughts you had yesterday. Mm. Sorry, out of the 80,000 thoughts you had today are the same, 95% of them are the same thoughts you had yesterday. So how can you expect anything to change? Where if I can re-trigger those emotions, now I start sending it down on a new path. But I can't change his thought, but I can change his emotion. And it's the emotion that connects the dots. So when you go into, like you mentioned earlier, Alex, you know, you were taught the rudiments of marketing, or rudiments of selling, you know, ABC, you know, always be closing, FAB, features, advantages, benefits, right?
Yep.
That stuff came out of the 60s and 70s. And I don't know how well it worked then, but I know it doesn't really work today. I think the human experience has evolved, and we require a salesperson that understands the human experience.
I love that.
It's the same thing when people always try to put money first. I always love this one. Okay, sales guy goes out. He's sitting in front of a customer, and then he walks out of the sale without the sale. But what was he there for in the first place? Well, he was there to make commission. Okay? You walk into any sale expecting to make money. Okay? You're going to walk out without the sale. When I say that, there's nothing wrong with getting paid. But you have to deliver something of value to the person you're selling to. Okay? It's like saying, well, listen, Alex, I'll deliver the value to you after you pay me. Mm. That sucks. That's no good. And the world itself doesn't operate that way. The world itself operates on a premise that you do the work for 2 weeks and you get paid in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So why should being in business be any different to me, I look at this and I think to myself, you know, and I do, I get this, consultants do this all the time. Yeah, pay me $5,000 and I'll tell you what you need to know. Okay? That's not a good way of doing business. That's not how I do business. Mm-hmm. I want to deliver real, tangible value. So when a customer turns around, he says, well, can you give me a quote on my marketing or give me a quote on my advertising? I'll say, no, I can't. Because I don't know you well enough. But let's do this. Let's have another meeting tomorrow and we'll talk some more.
Yep.
Meanwhile, this gives me an opportunity to deliver even more value to this guy. And then at the end of the second meeting, he'll say, well, you know, how much is all this going to cost me? I said, geez, man, I don't know. But let's have another meeting tomorrow and we'll talk about it. And I'm sure by then I should be able to tell you.
Yep.
I would hope anyway. But that gives me another opportunity to deliver more value. So what ends up happening is, by the time the third meeting rolls around, the guy turns around and he says, for God's sakes, Randy, give me the price so I can write you a check. And yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
You see, my world is probably a little bit different than yours, Alex, you know? I'm 64 years old.
Yeah,
I've been doing this for 43 years, and I'll tell you, I only work with people that I love to work with. Okay, nothing worse than working with a client that just you don't like. It just sucks the life right out of you. So
yeah,
I'm very careful about the clients that we work with today.
Yes, that's a big one, isn't it? And that's something that a lot of the people listening, they're earlier on in their businesses. And so they're at that point where they are, you know, working hard for every sale. They don't have either the confidence or the cash flow to be turning away sales and customers. And they'll people please and they'll end up in that exact situation.
Oh.
Which you've got to go through that. Kind of like you going to that pre-interview, you've got to figure out what you don't want before you figure out what you do. You can't just disqualify people without knowing them first. But you start to get that gut feeling, I suppose. And I still make the wrong decisions all the time.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, ask my wife, Lori. She'll tell you I make the wrong decisions all the time. The interesting part about this is that people look at things from the wrong angle.
Yeah.
You know, got to get the money first. It's all about the money. Well, you and I are both in sales, Alex. Okay? When somebody comes to you, a sales rep comes to you, and you know they're there for the money, you know it. It comes off them like a stink. It does. Does it not?
Yeah, gross.
You know, like, I mean, you know right away that the guy's there for a commission check. Okay? Where if somebody is delivering genuine value, and this is what I'm saying, value is not what you think it is, it's what they think it is. So everything is a perceived value. Your perception of value and my perception of value may be two different things. So this is where question and answer becomes really, really important. Now you come to the time for the close. You've asked all these questions, you found out the guy's emotions, you find out how where this guy's head's at. You cross him over the bridge. Now we're doing the close. And he says to you, Alex, let me think about it. Now some people would turn around and say, okay, well, when do you want me to follow up with you and blah, blah, blah. I don't do that. I say, Alex, let me see if I understand this correctly. Didn't you say over here that if you could do this and this, that would make you feel great? Yeah. And didn't you say if you could do this and this, that would be fantastic? Yeah, I said that. Did you not tell me that when your boss asks you to do something, it makes you feel bad? Did you not say that to me? Yeah, I said that to you. Okay. What do you need to think about, man? Your boss is going to be happy. You're going to feel happy because of this. You're going to feel happy about that. Like, do you really need to prolong this pain anymore? or do you just need to sign the check now? Now, that may be very direct, but it's based on the information that I've gathered. You don't gather that information. When it comes time to close, you're left with, okay, well, when do you want me to follow up with you? You have to, you're asking those questions to A, take the temperature, B, get the information, C, find out how he feels, so that when it comes time to close, you have information to close with. People don't do that. It's that closing effort that separates the winner from the loser. Not that anybody's really a loser, but it's what drives that sale.
Yeah. Love that.
And some people, and this is what I'm saying, it's important to lay out the elephant in the room. Because, you know, when a salesperson walks into your office and you say, hey, listen, I need a new microphone. Oh, okay, well, here's a microphone. But is it the right microphone? Does it have the right connections? Does it have this? Does it have that? If I don't ask those questions, I don't know.
Yeah,
and I don't know how you feel.
When I bought this microphone and this camera, the young man at the electronics shop, he said, well, what are you recording? Which is a great question, you know?
And great question.
Yeah, it's like the, you know, that Jordan Belfort, to mention him again, when he has that famous sell me this pen line, and then everyone asks him, how would you sell me the pen? Well, the first thing he says is, how long have you been in the market for a pen? Or what do you want to write? That sort of thing. He just asks a question before he tells you anything. It's really, really cool. And I love it. And so what we often do, when I'm teaching people to copyright, actually, is the structure. If someone's never written a line of copy before or an ad, we say, okay, let's write a headline to capture some attention and then go straight into a question that people can kind of start to, you know, ask themselves and let them know that you understand their problems and you understand where they're at. And sometimes people think my copywriting is a bit waffly and a bit long, but the people come out the other end of it.
I don't feel bad.
Yeah, the people who come out the other end, they're ready to buy. And so I love that. This is really cool. This is really good stuff.
You know what? It's interesting what you said about being waffly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a tendency of being waffly too. But you know what? Every copywriter has his own style. Me, I always like to start off with either a question or imagine if your life would be like this. Okay, you know what? I think it's important to get the customer not only to engage, but to get them thinking out of the gate. When you start off with, this is my story, it's like, really? Where when you start off with being engaging, whether you're doing a blog, whether you're doing a sales funnel, whether you're doing a website, that content is so important. And, you know, I did a study a couple of years ago. You might find this interesting. We took a series of, I think, 10 or 15 websites, different brands, and we were measuring the amount of sales on each of the websites and based on content. And we found that the content that was really poorly written but really had a beautiful, like they had a beautiful website, like really nice pictures and what have you, but the content sucked right down the drain. Okay, the websites that had lousy imagery and crappy colors, okay, but had really awesome content, up they went. So we found that content is what drives a person to make a decision. Now, that don't eliminate colors and mediums and imagery out of that mix, because providing that those factors meet with the content, you got a winner. If they don't, the content is still strong. It will still work, but it doesn't have the cadence that when everything's all put together properly, right? And I think, so content is huge in how people deliberate their decisions and how you connect on an emotional level with your customer can all be done through written word.
Yeah.
Or through video or whatever. To me, that's the important factor, is that message has to have its own clarity. So when you start off by asking a question, or, you know, I'm giving them a concept to think about, that drives that engagement right off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay, I want people when they read my copy, I want them to think. I want them to feel something right away. How would you feel if you could have that dream vacation you always wanted but could never afford? Where would that dream vacation be? Automatically, you're thinking Italy or you're thinking France. In my case, I'd be thinking Australia. But
yeah, yeah. No, that's great. It's really interesting. And something I was interested in asking you was, you know, there's obviously foundations of marketing that will be the same now as they were in the 80s, such as emotion, you know, recognizing, you know, simple things, recognizing problems, recognizing their current reality and the end result you want to get them to, and then kind of bridging that gap for them and showing them how your service is that solution. But I'm curious, you know, because right now everyone says that, you know, with AI coming out, we're in, the fastest period of change. But I reckon that's just kind of what we know now. So if you think back across 40 years, what do you believe is the biggest or fastest period of change that you've seen in the marketing space?
That period between 1990 and 2005.
Was that like .com? Okay. How so? What happened? You
know, let me just take a step back, because you know what? Back in the 80s, and this is obviously long before you, you're just a young pup, but back in the 80s when I got started in marketing, I can tell you firsthand, advertising was not based on emotion. Matter of fact, it wasn't until probably the late 80s, early 90s when Nike came on the scene that started to form a trend. And even then, back in the early days, I mean, of Nike, Nike wasn't as an emotionally committed company as they are today. It was all about getting a product on the market. How fast can we get it out there? How much money can we spend? Back in the 80s, there was maybe a dozen ad agencies, big ad agencies worldwide. And they control probably 90% of most of the business in the large corporate marketplace. When that kind of crashed in the early 90s and the rise of the digital age, that digital age really changed everything. Because the days of the ad agency, the television set, the radio, the magazines, the newspapers, these things all started to draw to the end of their careers. And you know what, don't get me wrong, I mean, there is still, quote, something like TV out there, okay? But TV commercials are not what they were back in the 80s. They're different today. TV commercial, well, they're not really TV commercials. They're more for commercials for the internet. And those internet commercials are much different than a TV commercial, okay? Radio commercials come way down in price because nobody wants them anymore. Newspapers are going out of business all over the world. And magazines are going to digital because they can't afford to print it anymore. So that whole era is now behind us. So the rise of the digital era was huge. But that period between, I don't know, I'd say 97 to 2005, 2006, was enormous change. because people, the new generation of people coming out, or the new generation that were growing up, realized that what we were doing in the 80s doesn't work anymore. We need to find something new. Social media was coming out, and it was just coming out then. You know, Facebook was the first player to the stage. Didn't take long before, you know, the others started following. LinkedIn came on the scene. Twitter came on shortly after Facebook. And, of course, you know, after that, it was the Snapchats and all the other TikToks, what have you, that come out. This is the growing way of the next generation. Okay? Do I think there's been a huge change? Absolutely. And this comes back to what I said before. I think the human experience has evolved. Okay? You know, we look back and, you know, it's funny, I was talking to my wife tonight and I said, she was saying to me, it's going to be Halloween soon, so we should start watching Halloween movies. And I said, yeah, and I said, you know what? I remember when I was young and I saw Freddy Krueger for the first time. It scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But I watched it last year and I thought, oh my God. Oh my God, that's so horrible.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think the human experience has evolved past that. Okay? The days of control through media is rapidly becoming a thing of the past because human beings are aware that media is controlling them. Mm-hmm. Where back in the 80s, we didn't. But there's so much hype now on social media, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. Hey, you know what? Don't watch this commercial because of this. Don't watch TV because of this. Alex, you've seen all this. What it does is each time that propaganda, whether it's true or not, that propaganda comes out, it changes the way some people think. And how people think is what causes people to evolve.
Yeah.
So, the days of controlling people with fear. Case in point was 1942, War of the Worlds.
Yeah, got it, yep.
They had people in the streets screaming because they thought Martians were landing on Earth. Now, you and I look at that and we think, oh my God, that's crazy, right? Isn't that crazy nuts? And because we can't imagine that. But you know what? Your grandfather and your grandmother were probably part of those people that did it.
Yeah.
Or my grandfather and my grandparents probably did the same thing. Because they didn't know any better. Because they haven't evolved. See, we learn from our parents. But our parents now know less than we do. So it's kind of blind leading the blind to a great degree. So that evolving over a period of time is what sets the pace for the next generation to come through. And do I think marketing has changed? Like, don't get me wrong. What you think and what you feel controls reality. Mm. It controls perception. It controls consciousness. And that is who you are. The change to that is, or the caveat to that is that some people go through their lives and they don't know this. Which I think is one of the great things about podcasting, is that stuff that people know can get out and can get into the hands of the people that really need it. You know?
Yeah.
Like I said, do I think that marketing will change? No, I don't think marketing will change at all. I think the mediums will change.
Yep.
And I think how people think about the mediums will change. But do I really believe that unless people become something other than people, okay, then no, I don't. I think the rudiments that I was taught And for me, I was very fortunate because, you know, I've read the Bhagavad Gita, I've read the Holy Bible, I've read the Quran, the Torah, I've read a lot of the Gnostics. And the answers are in there. And I'm not saying that you have to be religious, that's not what I'm saying. What I am saying to you is that how you think and how you feel creates reality. And it's that reality, your reality. Your reality only means something to you. It doesn't mean anything to anybody else. You know, it's funny because when I was younger, I used to do a lot of, oh my God, man, I'm sitting here talking, you're not getting a word in edgewise.
You're all right, man, you're telling stories. You're telling stories. I really enjoy these, I enjoy podcasts because, you know, like you said, the information's getting out and it's getting out in a much longer form. Whereas you just talking about sort of legacy media and TV, for example, it's all sound bites. Even if they've got freaking Leonardo DiCaprio, they've only got him there for 4.5 minutes. So everyone's going to condense everything and say, that's all we've got time for. Here's a word from our sponsors. And so I think that, you know, long form, people say that, you know, people have shorter and shorter attention spans, which may be true for video, but podcasting is, you know, we could have snuck 3 ads in here by now and people would probably still be listening, you know? And so I think that we don't give people enough credit for their attention span. And if you look at the, you know, the biggest podcast in the world, Joe Rogan Experience, it's 3 hours an episode. And people listen to every episode religiously the whole way through. So it's incredible. I think that in terms of marketing through podcasts and stuff like that, I think there is a great way of doing it. I think that the more skilled podcasters will do it in their style as well, rather than making it so obviously an ad read. The comedians will make it funny. There's a great guy on the internet called Harry Mack, who's from Portland. He's a rapper, freestyle rapper.
Oh, really?
And he raps his ads. And he does a rap about anything that he's selling. And they're all selling the same thing. They're all selling VPNs and, you know, hair regrowth products and all
that's
that stuff.
That's what I need.
Well, there we go. Harry Mack's got a deal for you. He raps about it. And so I think knowing your audience, knowing your medium, it's such a massive conversation around every arm of everything you've spoken about, man.
Well, so, you know, I think one of the things that I really love about this conversation is that, you know, I think you and I are kind of on the same wavelength where this is concerned.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, we're growing through an industry, and, you know, you talk about Harry Mack, you know, and how he wraps his ads. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? That's totally unique. That's a total unique spin.
Yeah.
But you see, if you look at most of the podcasters, not all, but a lot of them, they put their videos out and they don't get hits. Okay? You know, one of my first videos I did was just a horrible video. It was one of the first ones I did. I started my YouTube channel this year, and when I started, I had
11,000 subscribers already, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, by the way,
four months, and ooh. You know what? It's really interesting that when I put up the podcast on my page, they get 7,000-8,000 hits, and, but they don't promote it. When I turn around and I say, hey, listen, you know what? I'm going to get it out on social media. I want to get it out onto my email list. I want people seeing. I want to tie it in with other offers. Okay? I want to be friends with Alex Morris because when you and I talking together, it's context. You know, you may be talking about one product. We'll talk about that for a minute, and then we'll talk about my product, we'll talk about that for a minute. And you know what? People engage with that. But you see, when you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, it's kind of like the guy who, and I have a good friend of mine, he does this all the time. He keeps doing the same thing over and over again, trying to get a different output, a different result. I'm a big believer in changing the game. Do the things that everybody else is not doing. If you keep doing the same things that everybody else is doing, classic example of that is Ed Mylett. And I'm a big fan. Ed Mylett, yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan. Joe Rogan. Okay? Joe Rogan doesn't care. And he makes you know he doesn't care.
Yeah.
About what comes out of his mouth. You see, that's his... People go there because they want to hear, you know, well, screw this guy. You people want to hear that. You see, and that's what I'm saying. Dare to be different. You know, do I have time for another story?
Well, it depends. It depends, Randy Crane. No, of course you do. Of course you do, brother.
Back in the 80s, I was running a telemarketing company. And ran it for almost 10 years. It was a combination of marketing, telemarketing, all tied into one. And at one point my sales were dropping off. And I couldn't understand why. And I had partners and investors in this business. So, of course, you know what? They're coming to me saying, you know, what the hell's going on here? I said, I don't know. I'm going to have to figure it out. So what I did was, I turned around and I, at that point, I was running about 180 telemarketers on the floor. And they were all being paid by the hour. So we turned around and I said, I'm going to continue to pay you by the hour. But for every no you get, I'm going to give you a bonus. So every time somebody says no to you, I'm going to give you a bonus. My rationale behind this was, everybody thinks that when you get a no, it's a bad thing, right? It's considered a failure. I needed to change the way people thought. So I want you to get no's. Get as many no's as you can. So I started bonusing them $2 for every no they got. But if you get somebody who says yes, you have to transfer it over to the girl, and she'll close it, but you get nothing. Because you can't suck out of the same well. Pick one or the other. So all the telemarketers decided that they'll take $2 for every no they get. I said, okay. My investors and my management team thought I was absolutely crazy. And then every time they would get a sale, they would transfer it over to the girl. So on we go. First week goes by, nothing changes. Everything's just getting worse. Second week, things are even worse. Third week, my sales went up by 9%. By the third week, my sales were up 31%. And by the sixth week, my sales were up almost 50%. Here's the interesting point to that. Dare to be different. Don't keep doing the same thing that everybody else does. You see, when you treat a no like a yes, people feel successful. When they feel successful, they want to do more. So my calls per hour went up, my no's per hour went up, which caused more sales to go up. Because you know as well as I do, you got to get through the no's to get to the yes's, right? So I changed the mentality of that group. And the interesting part about it is that my sales numbers went drastically high as a result of it, and it continued on for quite some time. Failure isn't a bad thing. Failure is a good thing. But you see, everybody relates failure as a bad thing. And this stems from Alex when you were a little boy. You know, you got a report card with an F on it, and you brought it home to mother, and mother said, Alex, you have to do better. I'm going to put you in your room, and you're going to study. And that was your punishment. And you remember it as a punishment, whether you like to think you do or not. It's in your subconscious that that was a failure. And failures are bad. Where in actual fact, failures aren't bad at all. They're really actually good. I'm a salesperson and I come to see you, Alex, and you say to me, yeah, Randy, I'm going to buy from you. I say, great, thank you very much. Here, sign the contract. Give me the check. There we go. Goodbye. What did I learn? Nothing. I learned how to sign a contract and how to get a check, neither of which mean anything in my life. But if you say to me no, and then I go on to a series of questions about why you said no, now what am I going to learn? Maybe I'm going to learn something about you. Maybe I'm going to learn something about the situation. Maybe I'm going to learn something about me. And you see, failure is a learning experience. So when do we grow as human beings? We don't grow when we're running. We grow when our face is down in the dirt and we've got to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off. Alex, you've been in business. I'm in business. How many times have you had to do that?
Daily.
but this is how you learn. This is how you grow. You grow as a human being. We're not machines here. We have to learn. Okay?
Yep. Yeah, 100%. And the thing I'm learning at the moment, man, is difficult conversations. I find the more staff I've got, the more clients I've got, the more money in, the more money out, the more difficult conversations I have to have, and the less I need to avoid them. And that is a skill that, you know, doesn't come easy, but you've got to have it. But the only way of getting better at them is by having difficult conversations, which rarely come from a positive situation, depending
how
you spin it.
They come from a negative one, and you're right, they do. But you know what? I'll tell you something. Here's a tip.
Okay.
Reframe it before you open your mouth. Reframe it before you open your mouth. So in other words, think about it, reframe it, and say, this is what I'm going to achieve out of this. This is going to be a difficult call, but this is what I want to achieve. And pick one thing that you want to achieve and write it down. And then keep looking at that through the conversation. And what you'll find is after that conversation is over, you'll have an answer to that question. And keep doing that. When you keep reframing what it is you're doing, okay, then those things become easy because it's practice. Okay? You know, there's an old saying that practice makes perfect, and I don't think that everything's perfect, but this is how you become better at your craft. You keep doing it over and over again. You know, one of the things that I'm absolutely relentless about is I do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over. And I keep doing it over and over and over and over. And, you know, people will say, well, my God, Randy, you know, you're relentless. You know, I have a client I used to, my client has a group of small customers that he doesn't have time to call. So I call those people for him. And there's one client on there, I have called her 443 times. And I just keep doing it. Because I know one day she'll answer the phone. And you see, this is what I'm saying. Be tenacious. Be repetitious. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. You know, marketing is the same thing. You don't understand people's emotions? Learn. Call me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you all about people's emotions.
You will. You've got your whole brand is the fearless marketer. And you don't get fearless without experiencing some fear and some scary situations in the first place as well.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what I want, Randy, is not to, you know, there's lots of things we want out of life. One thing I'd really love is for my daughters to think of me as a dude who can just sort things out for them, who wouldn't be scared to do a thing. And right now, I know there's lots of things I'd be scared to do, and I'm sure there always will be. But if I can have that little image and make them feel safe because of that, then that is going to be a really good goal for me. And you've been around the block a few more times than I have, and I dare say that you've got more fearlessness and tenacity than me, purely from those trips around the block. And not stopping every time you get to a crack in the sidewalk, so to speak, man. So, look, dude, I think, you know, I'm going to take my list of notes and chuck them away, because we got about 4% through my question. But the reason you've been on today, dude, is because you're interesting. You've got a huge history in marketing. And for the people who may have gotten to this point and think, you know, who is Randy anyway? I've got lists of clients on that piece of paper I just threw away. Amazon, Apple, Ben & Jerry's, PayPal, Merrill Lynch, huge names, people that you've worked with in the past.
Yes.
And what's really refreshing is out of all of that, you haven't come to me with nuts and bolts. You've come to me with the entire concept of what makes not only marketing effective, but also just business life in general. And it's really nice to see, man. It's really nice to see. Nuts and bolts conversations are boring. Save that for a different podcast.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know the nuts and bolts too well myself. I hire clever people to do that for me so I can talk smack. The Fearless Marketer, mate. That's where you are on all of your platforms. Randy Crane or The Fearless Marketer. 11,000 on Facebook. 11,000 on YouTube. 9,000 on Instagram. You're absolutely crushing it, my friend. What's the plan from here?
I have I just wrote my first book.
Great.
It's called Marketing Magic, and it is prompt engineering for beginners.
Okay.
With ChatGPT, and it's all geared around marketing. So for young marketers, and that will be available on Amazon.
Yep.
And I'm thinking about putting it out at 99 cents, as long as you give me a review.
Do it.
And so that's the first step. I've been invited to do a TED Talk next year.
Fun.
So that's kind of neat. And I mean, I think for me, I think the next step is to, look, I don't have a course to sell. Don't promote books. I don't do any of those things. You know, people want my help. They just pick up the phone and call me.
Yeah.
Or drop me an email or whatever the case is. Check me out on Facebook, Instagram. For me, I just want to grow my brand. And I built my brand based on honesty and integrity, and I really want to keep it that way.
I can tell. Really cool, man. Really cool. Really great stuff. And I love the sound of that. ChatGPT, not to start a whole nother wormhole, but knowing how to prompt ChatGPT is hugely important. And you can always tell the people who have said, write me a Facebook ad, because it uses the same words, the same structure all the time. I've heard it explained as if you gave a calculator, a pocket calculator, to me, I'd know how to do pluses, minuses, and multiplication. But if you gave it to a rocket scientist, they could calculate the age of the universe with the same tool, right?
That's right.
So it's a tool. I think it's an amazing thing, but you got to know how to use it, and I'm still figuring that out. So a prompt.
Well, you got to be able to use it properly. And, you know, like I said, it's the most important thing about ChatGPT is to learn to be specific.
Mm.
You can't just turn around and say, here, write me a story about a dog that walks down the street.
Yeah.
It will write it, but it'll be a stupid story, or it'll be a lousy story. Where if you add context, okay, particular type of dog, what kind of street, what kind of day is it, what kind of friends does he have, and add to that prompt. And then add in your tone, add in your formatting, add in your just whatever context and environment that you want this built around. And then it will write that story and write it well. But even if you do that, you still have to be a marketer, and you still have to not rewrite it all, but you need to add your own flair to that. Remember something, ChatGPT is a machine. It's not human. And humans connect with humans, not with machines. So the marketers or the people that think that ChatGPT is going to replace human beings are insane. You know, I was reading an article not so long ago. They were saying that the human mind processes 50 billion bits of information per second. Okay? ChatGPT can't do that in a year. Okay? Your computer at home can't do that in 5 years. Okay? So that process, no matter how good it becomes, will never be what the capabilities of the human mind is going to be. So that being said, my ideas come from here, not from there. So the whole concept of ChatGPT replacing people and marketers or what have you, if you expect ChatGPT to write your marketing content for you, think again. Okay? It can't write emotional content. It can fake it.
Yes.
Okay? But you know what? Alex, you're a human being. I'm a human being. Do you know when someone's being authentic or when somebody's being fake?
Yeah, absolutely. You can smell it pretty quickly.
And you know it. All you got to do is open your mouth. Okay? And whether you're opening your mouth on a video, or whether you're opening your mouth on a page on the internet, it's still going to amount to the same thing. You know, marketers today have to be authentic. They have to be the real deal. Okay? Lots of fake marketers out there. Lots of fake salespeople. Lots of fake everything out there. Okay? Lots of fake podcasters. You just don't happen to be one of them.
Well, I try not to be. Thank you very much.
Of course. What I am saying to you is there are a lot of people that want to take shortcuts. And you know what? There's no shortcuts in life. You either do it or you don't do it. It's coming back to your pen. You know, pen story, you know. My dad used to say to me, he'd say, here's a lighter. I'd say, yeah. He'd put it down right here in front of me. He'd say, try and pick that up. And I'd say, okay. He'd say, no. Try and pick that up. So I would go. He'd say, no. He'd say, try and pick it up. You can't try to do it. You either do it or you don't do it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? The word try is just an excuse for people who fail, who understand the word failure as being what it is. Okay? It's an excuse. I tried to do it. Okay? I want you to try. You know? These are, like I said, trying is not, you either do it or you don't do it. And if you live your life that way, and it just means that, okay, well, you know what, you're going to give something 100%. If you give everything you do 100%, doesn't mean you're going to win every time. But it does mean that you're going to give it 100%. And you're going to win more than you lose.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, just nuggets upon nuggets, bombs upon bombs, coming out of the mouth of Randy Crane today. Really exciting stuff, man. And never for a second apologize for telling long stories, because that's where we get stuff from. That's why you're on the show, on a long form conversation. to have those conversations that we never get the time to have in the grind of daily life. So it's really nice to put aside these hours or so to have a chat with someone who otherwise I would have never have met. And so really, really cool. So I'm really excited. Be sure to send me those links when you have that book ready. I'm really excited to see it. And everyone listening, guys, you know, we've got the links in there already up above to the side, wherever you're looking at this one, The Fearless Marketer. I'm really liking the YouTube videos particularly. So great stuff, man. Really great stuff. I'll thank you once more, Randy, for being on the show today and sharing such awesome insights with us.
It was such a pleasure meeting you and such a pleasure being on your show. Thank you very much. Hope you're going to invite me back again.
100%. Yeah. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. I want to learn about, we got a lot of stuff to get through. I want to learn about the inside secrets of Ben and Jerry's. So,
you got it.
Excellent. Well, anyone listening or indeed watching that one, thank you so much for being here. I'll be back in the next few days with another episode of Coaches to the Moon. But until then, thanks for listening. Much love and peace out. Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.